This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. An underreported story in this most controversial of presidential elections has been how much money has been spent by candidates and organizations. The numbers are mind-bogglingly large. Hundreds of millions of dollars were spent during the primary races. In the lead-up to the general election, billions were spent. Ironically, it's the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and political action committees supporting her who spent the most amount of money in the 2016 race. I say ironic because it is the 2010 Supreme Court decision in the case Citizens United versus FEC that unleashed much of today's spending spree. Citizens United is a conservative organization that wanted to air an anti-Clinton documentary just before the 2008 primary election that Clinton was running in. Well, joining me to help tease apart the amount of money and its sources in this year's elections is Vivica Novak. She is the editorial and communications director at the Center for Responsive Politics. Welcome to the program, Vivica.
It's good to be with you, Sonali.
So I know your organization has for many years been one of the important groups that has been tracking this issue for years, even before Citizens United. So given that, just from a sort of general sense, what you're seeing in this year's election kind of out of the realm of what you've seen in previous elections? Are we living in unprecedented times if we think of our elections in terms of the money spent on them?
Well, we do find that with every election cycle, the money simply goes up. It never goes down, it always goes up. Now, it goes down from presidential years to midterm years, but the general trend is upward. So we'll see more money spent this time around, but not that much more than in 2012, about $300 million more. We're estimating that this election, the congressional and the presidential together, are gonna cost about $7 billion.
I can't even fathom that amount of money just being spent on elections. So let's talk about what form that takes. What is it that Citizens United has made possible today that was not possible before 2010 in terms of these outside organizations that are just supposed to be independent, but we often find that they tend to not be so independent, that are spending money on their favorite causes, their favorite candidates?
Yeah, well, the outside spending groups, the super PACs mainly, and some dark money groups too, account for most of the increase in the cost of the election. In fact, if you look at candidate spending, both Senate and House candidates spent less than they did in the last presidential cycle, and the presidential candidates only spent a little bit more. And again, we're talking all presidential candidates, including those who were involved in the primaries, not just the nominees. But the outside spending groups have ratcheted up their investments in these candidates. There are ones that are devoted solely to a single candidate, like Priorities USA Action with Hillary Clinton. And there are others, like the Senate Leadership Fund or House Majority PAC, that are essentially arms of the Republican and Democratic parties that are multi-candidate. They decide where to spend their money just like the parties do, and they go and they help various candidates that they think need it.
And so where exactly does the money for super PACs come from? Super PACs, meaning political action committees. We've had PACs before Citizens United, and then they kind of, you know, became sort of on steroids with what Citizens United enabled. So where does that money that they get come from?
So super PACs can take any amount of money from almost any source. So corporations or unions can give to them directly, and so can individuals in any amount. So you see $1 million plus donors to super PACs. They can take it from dark money groups. They can take it from LLCs, which are even darker than dark money groups.
And when you say dark money groups, it sounds like something out of a sci-fi film. What exactly is a dark money group?
Dark money groups are nonprofits, politically active nonprofits. They're organized, most of them are under Section 501c4 of the Internal Revenue Code, and they're supposed to be social welfare groups. But as the law has developed over the years, they seem to be allowed to spend up to half their money or half of their resources on politics. They spend a lot of time trying to be very creative. These groups have popped up, and they, spend, you and I would think they're spending all their money on politics, but they come up with creative labeling to sort of stay under the 50%. But they don't have to disclose their donors. That is part of the advantage. They have a disadvantage in that they have to do some creative accounting to stay under the 50%, but then they have a great advantage in that they can take unlimited amounts from any source and don't have to disclose it. So you have a lot of people out there who are very reluctant, I guess, to be known as somebody who gives $1 million to a group working on behalf of a certain candidate.
What about the loopholes that some of these political action committees take advantage of? I understand that that if a super PAC, which is what we were discussing earlier, waited until after October 20th of this year to register that they were basically going to be allowed, they would get to simply reveal details about themselves until after the election. Tell us about this loophole.
So there are certain dates, reporting dates, that the FEC sets, and it's you can game the system. So if you register, if you spring up and form a super PAC after October 20th this year, you were able to avoid reporting your donors until after the election, actually December. And that's any good campaign finance lawyer will know this trick. And so we've been able to spot a couple dozen of these that have sprung up since October 20th. It's unclear at this point how much they've spent. Most of them have been spending some money, but that will, we'll have the final accounting later.
And it's those
And
last few days before the election that the ads start gearing up and the campaigning gets into the highest gear because anything can change, particularly in a tight race. And so that October 20th deadline is a really good sort of loophole for these groups to exploit.
In the case of tight races, especially, these sort of pop-up super PACs, we call them, can be very helpful to a candidate or hurtful to his or her opponent, because they could have prearranged that tens of thousands of dollars or $1 million or several million dollars are going to flow into their coffers, and they'll be able to spend it in those last few days.
Now, Vivica, in previous elections, it has seemed as though Republicans have been able to take greatest advantage of the Citizens United decision. This time around, however, from looking through your organization's website, opensecrets.org, the Democratic candidate seems to have blown everyone out of the water in terms of how much money has been either raised by her campaign or by outside groups on her behalf. And Trump, who of course has benefited from a lot of free coverage that he hasn't had to pay for, has spent or had spent on his behalf far less. This is kind of surprising.
Well, Donald Trump, of course, got a late start to his own fundraising. And then there was
That's right. Clinton
some.
has been essentially campaigning for what, 4 years?
And then, of course, there were several super PACs that tried to be the Donald Trump super PAC. And there was some confusion early on about which one really was. Plus, he's a very controversial candidate. So super PACs do have to disclose their donors. And I think a lot of people, a lot of the very wealthy Republicans that have in the past donated to the pro-Mitt Romney super PAC, for instance, weren't quite on board. They were a little skittish, and some of them came on board later, but a lot of them have just stayed out of it.
So now I understand the candidates themselves, and we count all the candidates, not just Trump and Hillary and Clinton, although Trump and Clinton formed the lion's share, but the candidates themselves raised $1.3 billion, and then the amount raised by super PACs supporting them was $500 million. So actually, the lion's share does come from the candidates themselves and their own campaigns, right?
The candidates and their own campaigns, and then the super PACs working exclusively on their behalf. And that's where we get our numbers, yeah.
So then, in terms of the outside money coming in, it still seems to be less than what the candidates themselves are raising, at least for now?
So in the presidential race, the super PACs have not raised as much as the candidates. That is true.
Let's also talk about the fact that these super PACs are supposed to remain independent, right? This is what this decision, Supreme Court decision, Citizens United versus FEC, was supposed to have allowed, that because money was seen as a form of free speech, that any individual who had the money should be able to spend whatever they want on whichever their favorite candidate is, as long as they're not coordinating directly with that candidate. But what sort of, is that strictly true in all cases, that there's independent?
The candidates and the super PACs have really been pushing the envelope on the coordination rule, but the FEC is pretty much deadlocked on almost every important issue right now, 3-3, and has not been bringing coordination cases. You'll recall last year when Jeb Bush formed his super PAC Right to Rise, for months beforehand, he was going around and raising money for it and being very explicit. You need to, you should get on board with this super PAC we're going to have coming online. So it's been, as long as he hadn't yet declared as a candidate, he was technically allowed to do that. But then even beyond that, you have candidates appearing at super PAC fundraisers. They're not supposed to ask for more than $5,000, but they can simply give a speech and step aside, and somebody else can make the ask. There's a lot of ways in which a normal person might think, well, that looks like coordination to me, but legally, in the eyes of the FEC at least, it has not been held to be so.
It seems quite ironic that Hillary Clinton's campaign has benefited even more so than Trump's campaign from a decision that essentially arose from an anti-Clinton documentary that Republicans were trying to air in back in 2008. So another aspect of money and how it is spent that your organization covers is this idea of bundling. And Clinton's basically had a lot of different kind of different interests, if you will, bundling their donations. Can you tease that apart for us? Explain a little bit what bundling means?
Yeah, so each individual is only allowed to give $2,700 per candidate per election. That's $5,400 if you count the primary and the general. But the same person can go and round up friends to give the maximum amount to the candidate as well. And some people are pretty good at this, as it turns out. And so you have these bundlers. They gather the checks and deliver them, sometimes not physically, but they get credit for a lot of contributions. So the question is, who are these people? Hillary Clinton has been disclosing the names of her bundlers, and Donald Trump has not. That kind of mirrors what went on in the 2012 election, where Romney did not, but Obama did. And the only thing is that Obama was much more explicit about how much his bundlers raised for him, even though he just reported it in ranges like 500,000 to a million, and you have 25 names or whatever. Hillary Clinton is just listing everybody who raised at least $100,000 for her. So It's not great, but there is no legal requirement that candidates disclose their bundlers. You certainly would believe that they have reason to be grateful to their bundlers, but we're not getting great disclosure on this, although Hillary Clinton has certainly been a lot better than Donald Trump.
And of course, if one wants to appear ethical, one does try to disclose as much information as possible. But the question remains whether one believes that money is equivalent to free speech or not. What about Senate and House races? We've been talking primarily about the presidential race, where it's interesting to see how much money the Democratic candidate has raised. But in the Senate and House, are there any numbers that you can share with us, particularly about, say, where the most money or which races the most money might have been spent on?
The most expensive House and Senate races in the Senate, the Pennsylvania Senate race, there's been $46 million spent, and that's just by the candidates. And if you count the outside groups, you have $117.8 million, which is really a whopping amount of money. I think it may be a record. I'd have to check. New Hampshire is number two. The Nevada Senate race is number three. House races, again, including outside spending, Florida District 18, Nevada District 3, that's the seat being vacated by Joe Heck, who is trying to replace Harry Reid. Joe Heck is a Republican. And then Pennsylvania District 8. But these are really, huge amounts of money. Who would think that a House race would cost $23 million, for instance?
Wow.
But it's impressive.
Now, there's a reason why people spend this money. Earlier in our conversation, you referred to it as an investment. How strong an investment does one make if one is really wealthy, or how I should say, how sure a bet do you have? I mean, is it fairly clear that the more money that gets spent on one side of a race, the likelier it is that that person or that issue will win?
It is usually the case by far that the person who spends, the candidate who spends the most money wins. Now, incumbents also almost always win. And incumbents, it kind of goes together because incumbents have more ability to raise money, really, because they're out there, they have more name recognition, and because corporate PACs, for instance, like predictability. So they tend to give to the incumbent. So, yes, having more money definitely makes a difference. It's not everything. You still need a decent candidate, and a lot of other factors come in as well, but money makes a huge difference.
So, give out a website where people can go and explore through all of the numbers. There is certainly a ton of data that your organization collects, and you've got lots of sort of drop-down menus where people can check and see what money is coming in where. The website for Center for Responsive Politics.
It's opensecrets.org, and members of the press can email us. We try to help folks who are trying to figure out the best way to use the site. There is a lot of data there, and we hope it's useful.
And again, that's opensecrets.org. Vivica, thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you, Sonali.
My guest is Vivica Novak, the Editorial and Communications Director at the Center for Responsive Politics. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.